Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 136 for March 16th, 2008. Coming up in a few minutes.
These sugars survive all the way through fermentation, through distillation, through the many years of maturation into the bottle itself.
That's Colm Egan, the master distiller at Bushmills on crystal malt. It's not the latest trend in controlled substances, but the secret behind Bushmills 1608, which marks the 400th anniversary of distilling in the area around the village of Bushmills. Part two of our series on Irish whiskies coming up, but first, let's look at the news. British Chancellor of the Exchequer, Alistair Darling, ended the decade-long freeze on whiskey taxes this past week, and the howls could be heard all the way from Orkney to Westminster. Starting this week, taxes on whiskey and other liquors will rise by about 6%. Darling cited his desire to provide more aid for the poor and noted the previous 10-year freeze in his budget statement. As might be expected, industry groups are not happy, and even the Exchequer's own analysts estimate lower sales will mean no actual increase in tax revenue. The whiskey thieves have struck again. Not in the tax office, but this time at Gordon and McPhail's shop in Elgin. The BBC reports someone stole an $1,800 bottle of 30-year-old Glengoyne Millennium Clock whiskey from the store this past Wednesday. It clearly wasn't a collector. They left the presentation case behind. Inverhouse master blender Stuart Harvey uncovered a find in his warehouses recently. Casks of the Hankey Bannister blend, originally produced back in 1966. The blend includes malts from several distilleries closed long ago, including Garnheath, Killylock, and Glenfager. Just 1,900 bottles of the rare blend will be available worldwide. In the past, I've mentioned the experiments Harlan Wheatley at Buffalo Trace does with his bourbons. He has about 1,500 different project casks in his warehouses, using different barrel toasts, mash bills, yeasts, and so on. Now, another one of his experiments is going on the market. Buffalo Trace's annual experimental collection releases for 2008 are two bourbons that spent some time in French oak Cabernet Franc barrels after maturing in traditional American white oak casks. One was aged for 6 years traditionally and another 8 years in the wine cask. The second aged for 8 years traditionally and another 8 in the French oak casks. The limited edition releases are going on sale this month. Last fall, we heard from master bartender Bobby Gleason about ways to use whiskey in cocktails. Now, Bobby has made it into the Guinness Book of World Records. At a recent drinks industry trade show in Las Vegas, he mixed 253 drinks in 1 hour, breaking the old record of 179 drinks set back in 2004, and no margarita machines involved. If you'd like to hear more, check the archives for my interview with Bobby in episode 122 from last December. Finally, Forbes magazine is out with its annual list of the world's richest people, and the title of richest person in the whiskey business apparently goes to none other than Vijay Malia. Now, Malia only came in tied for 962nd on the list out of 1,125 billionaires worldwide. Forbes estimates his fortune at $1.2 billion. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Woodford Reserve holds its final Bourbon Academy class of the spring on Saturday, the 22nd, at the distillery in Versailles, Kentucky. March 28th and 29th is the Whiskies of the World Expo in San Francisco. The Munich Bar and Whiskey Festival is that same weekend in Munich, Germany. And Whiskey Messen in Kolding, Denmark is on the 29th. Tartan Week in New York City starts on the 30th and runs all week long. The Glenlivet City Links Tour will be in New York from April 1st through the 11th, and Whiskey Live New York is on April 2nd. It's also Whiskey Week in Chicago. There are usually whiskey events each night leading up to Malt Advocate Magazine's Whiskey Fest Chicago on April 4th. The following weekend, April 11th and 12th, is the Maker's Mark Thoroughbreds and Redheads weekend in Kentucky. Friday the 11th is the running of the Maker's Mark Mile Horse Race at Keeneland in Lexington. Saturday the 12th is Ambassador Day at the distillery in Loretto. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay at Laphroaig.com. Thank you. In the last episode, we heard from David Quinn, Master of Whiskey Science at Middleton Distillery and a former Master Distiller at Bushmills. Of course, the 17th, tomorrow, is St. Patrick's Day, and this is a special one for the folks at Bushmills. They're celebrating 400 years since the first license to distill whiskey was issued in the area around Bushmills back in 1608. Bushmills has released a special expression in honor of the anniversary. I caught up with Bushmills master distiller Colm Egan at a New York City tasting of Bushmills 1608.
I was really under a lot of pressure, I suppose, coming up to the 400 celebrations, and I was tasked with coming up with a new whiskey. We had this whiskey that was made from crystal malt for a number of years, and so that's what I've been tasting, and I always thought it was something different, something exceptional.
Now, crystal malt sounds like it ought to be something illegal, like a controlled substance, but what is it?
Crystal malt is actually a unique way to dry the barley, so it happens in the kiln. So normally the malt is malted in drum maltings. So this is where the outside of the drum is heated, and the barley inside is allowed to almost like simmer and stew. So the moisture is kept very high. What happens is the sugars inside in the barley itself are allowed to be broken down into very simple sugars. And that happens over a period of between about 30 and 40 minutes. And after about 40 minutes, very hot air at about 500 degrees C is blasted through the barley itself, and that crystallizes the sugars and then captures the sugars. So I'm unable to use those sugars and make them into whiskey, but really what they do is they impart a lot of flavor and character to the whiskey. And these sugars survive all the way through fermentation, through distillation, through many years of maturation into the bottle itself. And I think really when you taste the whiskey itself, you'll find something very unusual and very satisfying, I think is a good word to say.
Now, what I get when I taste it is the usual Bushmills taste, but then this little almost explosion on the front of the tongue at the end of the drink of the sip that sort of comes from those sugars, right?
Yeah, well, the main thing for me is that it's still part of the Bushmills family, and yet has a very totally and very different expression also. For me, it's almost very, very fine on the palate initially. It's like laying a vanilla stick on your palate initially. And it's really only when it gets to the back of your palate that you get this impression that there's like a melting milk chocolate liqueur. And as the milk chocolate just melts away, the vanilla essence just oozes out. And all of a sudden, it's very mouth-watering. Your mouth is really gone. I said, my God, what is this? Very unusual. And it's left with these nice toasty notes on the side of your inside of your cheeks.
What's the future for this malt? Because I know it's basically available for this year only, right?
Yeah, I wanted to make it something a little bit special, like 2008. I wanted to make it something quite special. 2008 is an important year for us. We are looking back at a lot of history and heritage in the Bushmills area. So we just wanted to have it for one year. Also, I wanted to have a little reward for people to come to the distillery and see me, so it is available from 2009 in the distillery and some select duty-free outlets. But pretty much it's just done, as you say, on allocation, so there's a certain number of cases gone to some of the bigger markets, but pretty much available around the world at the moment in this year.
And this is sort of the flagship for the 400 anniversary celebrations, right?
Yeah, it's I suppose it's one of the many events that we're having during the year, but it's the main one that's going to, I suppose, linger throughout the year itself, and it's going to just put down a marker. So hopefully my previous master distillers and myself will be proud of the whiskey that I come up with. I certainly am, and I think really it's shown that we've learned a good bit from the past, but we're also looking to be quite innovative. We like to be innovative in Bushmills, and we've come out with some innovations in the past, and hopefully we'll continue to do so in the coming years also.
Now, we've talked about this before, but you mentioned earlier that you were under a lot of pressure with this malt, but you've also got the pressure, as you mentioned, of generations of distillers before you at Bushmills.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. I'm very respectful of the past, and I love to learn the lessons from the past, and I love to, I suppose, to have a few secrets that handed down from master distiller to master distiller, because that's the Bushmills way, and to produce a Bushmills whiskey that's going to taste the same today as it did 50 50, 100 years ago and continues to taste the same way. You need to have one very good people to actually run the distillery itself, but you have to have that really consistency of knowledge, a consistency day in, day out of making very fine whiskey. So to get that, you need the best of raw materials, you need really the best of, I suppose, really attention to detail right the way through. And that really starts coming in the gate, materials coming in all the way through, and the bottles leaving the distillery itself.
What else is being done at the distillery this year to mark the anniversary?
Well, we're having a number of parties. So the big party, I suppose, they're going to be is around April 20th time. That's really to mark the actual date itself. But the one that I'm most looking forward to is actually on the 4th of July, and that's going to be the friends and family. We're going to invite the entire village of Bushmills into the distillery itself, and we're going to have a real family day, because for me, really, Bushmills is all about the extended family, not just in the distillery, but all the way around the world. But we like to look after the locals as well. They've looked after us for a long number of years as well, so we want to keep them part of the celebrations as well.
By the way, the Bank of Ireland 5, 10, and 20-pound notes with pictures of the Bushmills Distillery that I mentioned several weeks ago should be going into circulation any time now. Irish whiskey is really one of the fastest-growing segments of the whiskey business. A few weeks ago, I mentioned the redesign of Clontarf's bottles to bring out more of the heritage behind the name. Clontarf is owned by Castle Brands, which started out producing Napog Castle. I sat down with Castle's Kelly Spillane this week.
Well, Napog Castle is basically the brand that founded this company. This company was founded by a Texas oil man whose parents, as kind of a retirement project, took upon the restoration of Napog Castle in Ireland. Mark Andrews' mother was one of the foremost female architects in the country, and the restoration project took about 10 years, and it reopened on its 500th anniversary. While Mark's mother was restoring the castle, his father became a kind of a licensed tradesman, blacksmith, distiller, electrician in his retirement, and came across a store of old whiskey at a distillery going out of business in Tullamore called B. Daly, and that's Napog Castle 1951, which is today the oldest and rarest Irish whiskey sold in the world. From Napog Castle 51, Mark inherited about 3,000 bottles, and upon his sale of his oil business, decided to get into the whiskey business with Napog Castle 51 and also the later vintages of Napog Castle single malt.
And then how did Clontarf come about?
Clontarf came about through a purchase we made about 4 years ago of Beru Vodka, which is a very, very popular brand in Ireland, and becoming very popular here in the States. Clontarf was part of the Beru portfolio, and it gave us a nice range of Irish whiskeys as opposed to just the vintage-dated single malts.
Now, what in the Irish world, what's the difference between a single malt and a blend?
Well, a single malt comes from a single distillery using only malted barley. And in Ireland, you can really only get fine-quality single malt from Bushmills Distillery. The classic blends that come out of Ireland are generally a small amount of single malt and the balance being just grain whiskey, which could be corn, wheat, rye, or barley, depending on the brand.
And I know that Middleton, where Clontarf is produced, does a lot of unmalted barley in its production.
That's correct, yes.
What's the future for these brands? Because I know you just spent some time redesigning and rebranding Clontarf.
Irish whiskey as a category is exploding, not only here in the United States, but worldwide. It is the fastest growing subsegment of the whiskey business in the world today. To have a position in Irish whiskey is extremely valuable. It's one of the few categories in the United States that scream for more brands, not less. So we're very, very bullish on the future of these brands. We introduced Clontarf as kind of a mainstream Irish whiskey about 18 months ago in the United States. We're growing at about 90% a month right now. And we see basically the only restrictions to us moving forward is going to be the amount of supply we can receive from our friends at Middleton. So we're hopeful that that'll be ever increasing as the years go by.
Is that hard to come by to be able to? I know we have shortages of Scotch whiskey at times. Is there, with only
two or three distilleries in Ireland, is it even more critical in Irish whiskey?
Well, it's critical to forecast correctly. And when you're starting a new brand out, forecasting is difficult. It's when you get a couple, two, three, 4 years of history behind you, you can more accurately gauge with your partners how much whiskey that needs to be laid down. With a new brand like Clontarf, it's exceeded our expectations, so we have to manage our growth more properly. So that would be basically restricting it to the United States and probably about 9 or 10 countries in Europe for the time being.
Wasn't Clontarf the one that came in the three-bottle set originally with the three stacking bottles?
That's correct. Kind of taking a page out of our Beru Vodka handbook, originally Clontarf was introduced in a three-bottle stackable set, the top being a pure single malt, the middle being a reserve, which is largely single malt, and then the bottom was just the regular grain whiskey.
What does the future hold for Irish whiskeys? At some point, is there going to be need for another distillery or so to meet demand?
I would assume that there's going to be another distillery built by someone in Ireland soon. It just is a category that's too dynamic not to get competition. When you look at the two distilleries being owned by the two biggest liquor companies in the world, that gives you a clear indication of the future of this category. These companies wouldn't be in it unless they thought it had an extremely positive future attached to it. The United States is now entering its eighth year of double-digit growth in a row. You start to compound that on top of the business that's being done in places like Eastern Europe. The country of Ireland is screaming for more distilleries. And who builds one is anyone's guess, but I would assume that in the next 10 years you're going to see some activity in that regard.
You guys might do it?
That's a possibility. That's a possibility. It's we basically are a branding company right now. We don't really have any bricks and mortar, but you never know what the future holds and who puts an investment into the company.
Now, one thing I did not notice or know until now is that you guys also do the Celtic Crossing liqueur, right?
That's correct. We started out largely as a company with an Irish portfolio. Celtic Crossing was the second brand in the portfolio. It's basically a blend of cognac, Irish spirits, and honey. It's a fabulously tasting liqueur, and we've had some very, very nice results with it here in the United States.
And I know, I think Jim McEwen had something to do with that, right?
Jim McEwen had something to do with it, and a guy named by the name of Patsy McKevitt, who owns Terra over in Ireland, is our bottler, and he is actually the brand owner now. So
there's also another new entry in the Irish whiskey-based liqueurs category. Cooley Swan is made with single malt from the Cooley Distillery. Think of Bailey's Irish Cream with a bit more vanilla in it. Cooley is the smallest of Ireland's three distilleries, and it's best known for the Connemara and Tyrconnell series of malts, along with Kilbeggan. It also produces the whiskey for the Michael Collins series of Irish whiskeys sold in the U.S. For more on Cooley, check the Whiskey Cast archives from March of 2006 for my interview with Cooley founder and chairman John Teeling in episode 28. Finally, it wouldn't be fair to celebrate St. Patrick's Day without a toast. Kelly Spillane had one in mind.
We have a traditional toast here, which I always love, and that's to hold two glasses up and have one guy tip the bottom to the top and say never above you, and then the bottom to the top to the bottom of the next glass never beneath you, and then click them together, always with you. It's a traditional Irish saying that I think says a lot.
And that's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. You'll find links for the stories in this episode, along with the calendar of events, the Whiskey Cast store, and a complete archive of past episodes at the Whiskey Cast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. And my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. I'd love to hear from you. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.